Blog Talk Radio.
In much less detail, the podcast on a Wednesday night, January 15th, 2014. I'm Dre, he's Jay, and I'm done. The season is over as far as the picks go. Jason has clinched this year's picks title. He stored me away early. It's very anticlimactic. There's no reason for me to try to wait for his pick for next week for the conference title games and pick the opposite because it's over. It's all over. And Jason, you deserve all the props.
Well, thank you. I appreciate that. I know you were on my heels a few times there, and I got worried. I did. I mean, you put a little fear into me that, oh, no, oh, crap, I'm going to blow this huge lead that I have amassed several times during the season, and you'd chip away and chip away. But it was a lot of games to make up, especially when it all fell apart for you. Those last few weeks, I know week 16, week 17, one other week, three out of those last 4 weeks, I know I had double-digit wins. So it was big. It was big. It's the kind of lead that you want to have going into the playoffs. All I needed to do in the division round here was just not lose any ground to you. So just play even. We played exactly even. So I said we were done talking about it, but I just have to say I owe one huge thank you to the Kansas City Chiefs. Just one last time, because 4 points my way that didn't go to you, wild card weekend, which meant I didn't really have a whole lot of work cut out for me the rest of the playoffs. Those 4 points would have been huge. You'd still be in it right now if wild card weekend had gone a completely different way. So that sort of cemented it. I knew it was going to be difficult for you, but this is just weird. This just feels weird. This isn't the way we do this. We always find a way to drag this out to the very end. Not quite sure I'm glad it's over. I know it takes a little bit of the drama away from watching the games, when we pick the games, because, you know, it gets very tense. There's only three games left, and we just have this knack for somebody making the wrong move and taking it to the very end, and somebody needing to win the pick the Super Bowl for all the marbles. But I'm not gonna complain. I'll take my win. Got back on the horse here because you got me last year, so I'm glad to be back in the win column.
Yeah, I had to commit Harry Carrier or whatever you want to call it and take Kansas City in the wild card weekend because it was more important for me to put Kansas City away than to actually get the pick right. So, you know, I had to kill the Chiefs. I had to kill the Kansas City Chiefs once and for all. I could not pick against them and watch them win the game and just continue on in perpetuity through the playoffs, fucking me over and over again, like, I don't know, the San Francisco 49ers seem to be doing. But I didn't know they were going to do that. I knew the Chiefs would if I had picked against them, so I had to take them and put them to bed, and that opened it up for you. So, yeah, thank the Chiefs, and I'll say one more time, fuck the Chiefs, but I had to do what I had to do.
Well, you know, it was almost fitting in a year where it just seemed like you had some bad reads, that the other team that you highlighted that gave you some fits was Carolina. And they did have a few moments during the season that came up, especially on the show and in the recaps on the blog, that the Carolina, not to the level of the Chiefs, but Carolina did give you some trouble. You had some real issues because we were all year, it's are they legit, are they not legit, on the bandwagon, off the bandwagon. But that was one of the two games that you decided you were going to let me choose. I lost the first one. But it almost, and I even commented on this on the podcast when we picked the games, you giving me the San Francisco pick or letting me pick that game and then me having that, that was the game I felt the most strongly about of the weekend, and I'm glad I did. You were in a tough position because it's, would you just go completely against me, which wouldn't have worked for you? There's no path for you other than going 4-0, and then it's knowing which games to go with me with and which games to go against me with. So, I mean, it was a difficult road to hoe for you there. So I don't envy the position that you were in there.
Yeah, there's pretty much nothing I could do because, you know, if I go against you for San Diego-Denver, then I lose that. And New Orleans-Seattle wound up not mattering because it was a push, so it didn't matter either way. So the one game that you lost this weekend, I went against you. I did pretty much all I could. But then when you went on to win the other two on Sunday, that was it. Winning that first game on Sunday, San Fran and Carolina, that was the dagger, as you said on your review. So the Saturday games, go back and take a look at how this broke down this weekend. Started off with New Orleans and Seattle and the return of beast mode. We joke about beast mode, especially against the New Orleans Saints, and there he was once again, Marshawn Lynch running wild and breaking tackles and stepping on people's faces and just marauding through the Saints defense and doing whatever he wanted to do.
Yeah, the one thing that shocked me this weekend with all the pass-happy offenses in the league was, you know, now that we're in January, a lot of games were played in weather, and the teams that could run and the teams that could run well are all the teams that are moving on. Every single team that moved the ball on the ground reasonably well, maybe that Denver-San Diego game, it didn't matter as much. That game wasn't as run-heavy, especially on either side, as it really was with New England and Seattle. And then you have San Francisco, who's also another run-and-play-good-defense team. San Francisco and Carolina look like mirror images of each other, just Carolina a few younger years version, more of that up-and-coming team. But, yeah, Seattle, you know, kind of did what we thought they would do. They let New Orleans back in the game late. If you just looked at the stats, you would have thought New Orleans won that game going away. They put on an offensive show in the stat category, but that's great if you're, you know, watching the game on paper. But watching the game live, watching it on TV, you just did not have a feel that the Saints were ever going to really break through. And they, you know, moving the ball between the 20s, that's great. That won't win you a championship. And a lot of empty stats for the Saints.
Yeah, they kind of broke through in the fourth quarter there when Drew Brees finally was able to start getting a passing rhythm going. But up until that point, Seattle just wouldn't let him do anything. I mean, the weather, you know, also played a part. It seemed like both Brees and Russell Wilson, a lot of their passes were kind of fluttering on them and going in directions that they didn't intend for them to go. But, you know, in the fourth quarter, Brees did finally settle down and start putting it together and start figuring out how the wind's playing, what the conditions are like, how much oomph he needs to put on the ball, how much touch he needs to put on it. Quite frankly, that's something I don't know if Russell Wilson ever really figured that out. He didn't have to, of course, because of the run game difference. But, yeah, that's why New Orleans covered, because Brees, being the professional quarterback, did in the fourth quarter finally figure things out.
Yeah, Seattle's one of those points that's tricky because they can put up a lot of points on the strength of their defense and running game where a lot of teams can't, you know, they can score, but they don't seem to be able to score a lot of points. And Seattle's had quite a few instances where they'll put up, you know, 40 and Russell Wilson will throw for 130 yards. And he barely threw for 100 yards in this game, That's insane. You know, Drew Brees was over 300. Seattle gave up over 400 yards of offense. And if you told me that that's the way it was going to go down, I would have thought the Saints had a realistic shot of winning. People might have deluded themselves into thinking that because the Saints got that second touchdown and then the onside kick, but I didn't really see it ending with the Saints winning that game. I never really thought that they had the momentum or the control or anything going their way to do that. And then, of course, you have Marcus Colston, don't just completely brain fart. And it's like it was like high school back on the yard, you know. It's like, ah, who cares if it's a lateral? Just throw that thing completely forward. There was no debating. There was no music silly miracle gray area on that one. That was just a flat out forward pass. I mean, what are you thinking? Just step out of bounds and try a Hail Mary. But I don't know if they drew it up that way, but it was just an awful way for the Saints season to end.
Yeah, that was truly a what the fuck play right there. He was almost hanging out there by himself for a few days until the coaching staff finally said, okay, I know we're going away for the winter, but by the way, yeah, we called that play. It was supposed to be a lateral, obviously. It wasn't designed to be an illegal forward pass, but we did design that. Colston did not just break out on his own and decide to start throwing it around the field and cue the Benny Hill music and all of that. We actually tried to design a trick play, and it definitely backfired.
Well, at least the coaching staff owned up to it. But the right play, because he was about the 40-yard line, maybe, where he caught that ball. And that would have been a simple matter of catch it, step out, and give it the old heave. You got a much better chance of that than trying to run some crazy throwback trickeration.
And beast mode on 2 weeks rest, 66 yards after contact is what you get out of beast mode when he has 2 weeks of rest. That was just it was violent. It was forceful. It was just, you know, brute strength. It was everything you expect out of beast mode. And if he has that kind of performance in him again next week, Seattle's going to be very tough to beat again.
Yeah, and that sort of sets up the matchup. I mean, I guess if you're the NFL, you couldn't ask for better matchups than we have this week. I mean, you could not ask for better than San Francisco-Seattle, which is one of the best current rivalries. You know, this is probably taken the spot that had been occupied for years by Pittsburgh and Baltimore for the hard-hitting kind of slobber knocker game, you know, where it's not going to be over, probably not the highest scoring game, but for people who like to watch guys getting the crap beat out of them, this is going to be a great game. And, of course, you've got Manning, Brady, whatever, you know, stupid number they can put on the end of this. So I'm sure they're all creaming themselves over there. Very compelling matchups this weekend. But, yeah, neither one of us were surprised that Seattle won. And so what, it was a push. Ultimately didn't make any matter, but neither one of us were shocked. We both had Seattle big. So it just wasn't quite as big as we thought it would be.
Then Saturday night comes, and Indianapolis and New England, the one where you decided to go with the Colts and had some difficulty in that one. Again, ultimately, it didn't matter as far as the season goes. But I wound up stuck with the Patriots, and I went on record during the show that I wasn't very happy with that choice, because as unimpressive as the Patriots' receiving corps has been all year, to take New England and give 7 points against the comeback king of the NFL, Andrew Luck, I had a bad feeling about that. But as it turned out, New England was up to the task, and the Colts were not ready for prime time.
There were a few points where the Colts, a few points after the first ugly pick to start the game. That's not the way you want to start your playoffs. He almost pulled a Matt Schaub right away at the start of the game there. And your boy Dennard ends up getting tackled at the – not Dennard, Dennard ends up getting tackled at the one-yard line, and then they punch it in on the very next play. So, okay, so now it's 7-0, then it's very quickly 14-0, and you think this thing is just going to go completely out of control. And the Colts kept doing what they do. They kept, you know, fighting their way back in just solely on the arm of Andrew Luck. Is this his second year in the league?
That's right.
Is that it? Because for a guy who's only been in the league 2 years to have as much you know, excitement and comebacks, and then that playoff win last week already on his resume. Yeah, I mean, Indianapolis, you know, they lost the game, but they can't feel bad about their future. They can get a few things tightened up. They're going to be really good for a really long time. But that was totally
have a bright future with the running game, though, is what I think needs to be tightened up the most, because that was a glaring situation there where they were lacking in the running game, in a game where the weather and the conditions made you, again, like in Seattle and also in Denver and Carolina, you had to have the running game. You had to have the ability to move the ball on the ground in order to compete. And, again, Indianapolis came in without the running game necessary. I think that's glaring. I think that's job one, is to figure out how to do something about that running game and make that on a par with everybody else in the league, because they're very much lacking in that right now.
Yeah, and that lack of a running game really amplified to me how really special Andrew Luck is. He was getting it done. He was making throws that did, you know, I don't know if anybody else, very few, maybe Aaron Rodgers, a couple other guys, could make the throws into the coverages that he was making. Really tight windows. He was completing balls. He was also completing a few too many balls to the Patriots, which really went against them in the fourth quarter. They got that to 7, and then Andrew Luck just decided, you know, yeah, he's got to win the game all by himself, but it just turned into pick fest and sack fest. And, you know, you couldn't keep it going like that, especially with the ball control. And this is where I was shocked, was the sheer amount of running that the Patriots found. And, you know, the Colts traditionally have been a bad run defense, but they, you know, they have this sort of three-headed monster of running backs, and they definitely chose to ride the guy who was perfect for the weather. They just went with the big bruising guy in LeGarrette Blount. And we don't know. It could be a completely different guy who's carrying the rock this week in Denver, but sort of having this who do you plan for attack worked for them, because, you know, we were expecting it to be Ridley, that was the guy who you thought was going to be the guy, and it turned out to be completely the other way with Blount. And then to let that guy go on a 73-yard run to the sort of the backbreaker, how do you let that happen? What are you doing?
You're the Colts. That's what you do. People hammer away at you, and then eventually you just break and then let them have the big one. That's what happens. You know, and Indy, New England, best running game wins. I believe I had that one. Now, I didn't have the right running back, but I did know that the best running game was going to win in those conditions, and the Patriots by a mile had the best running game.
Oh, yeah, that wasn't even close. That wasn't even close. When I think about that game, I don't even have a memory of the Colts running the ball at all. They couldn't do anything.
No.
I mean, the only thing the running game did for them was give them long down and distance. That's not what your running game is supposed to do.
You know what I have a memory of? It was them bringing in Trent Richardson on a 3rd and 2 on the first drive, which is when Andrew Luck decided to throw that pick to Alfonso Dennard or Denard or whatever the fuck his name is. Because it's 3rd and 2. You got this guy that you traded a first-round draft pick for, big bruising running back, big-time guy. This is what you traded for, and let's throw the ball to the other team.
I figured something out about the Colts, though, with Trent Richardson. It was almost, it's like baseball, you know, when you're tipping your pitches. I got this feeling like every time Richardson was in the game, it was going to be a run up the gut, because every time he touched the ball, guys were in the backfield. I mean, Trent Richardson, you can't be any good as a running back if every time your hand touches the ball, you're hit. You're not going to go very far. It's really hard to blame Richardson for being a flop if every time, you know, as soon as the ball's in his stomach, he's getting hit. Really would have been nice if they would have had Richardson in there almost as a decoy, set up some play action, do something, because if the defense is that jacked up to stop this one guy, you've got to use that to your advantage, and they clearly didn't. So it was one of those, every time he was in the game, they gave him the ball and he'd get 2 yard loss. That wasn't very, not good vision, you know, not a lot of good foresight by the Colts to react to that, because by the time they could have reacted to it, they were so far down, they just had to throw the ball all day anyways.
I wonder with his history, how much Bill Belichick will exactly trust LeGarrette Blount in the future. I was as shocked as you were to see him lean on LeGarrette Blount as the bell cow all game, which is what Tampa Bay wanted to use him for when they brought him in, but he was so untrustworthy they eventually let him go for basically nothing. So I wonder, like you said, next week in Denver could be a completely different story. You got Stephen Ridley, the fumbler. Will he trust him? You got Brandon Bolden's back there as the sort of the Kevin Falk role, just waiting to get a carry or two and try to make an impact. Shane Vereen waiting to make another 100-yard game. You just never know what's going to happen when it comes to Belichick and these running backs. So Sunday comes along, and one of the most intense games I've ever seen between San Francisco and Carolina. We both noticed how San Francisco basically beat Green Bay and immediately started talking about how much they want Carolina. We want Carolina. They beat us week 10 in our house. We can't wait to come back and get revenge on Carolina. Now, it doesn't necessarily mean that's why they won the game, because they were so jacked up to see them, but it cannot be denied. They were jacked up to see the Carolina Panthers. The Panthers are just as jacked up to see them. And as a result, every single play, it seemed like somebody was getting their bell rung and talking about it after it was over as well. It was a game where every play, somebody knocks the shit out of somebody and immediately gets up and starts yapping at them and telling them how hard they just hit them.
Yeah, it would be an understatement to say that game was chippy, because that was just like full frontal assault from both teams especially for that whole first half. I mean, every play somebody was getting smashed, and it was great to watch, because we don't see a lot of football like that anymore where every team is fighting for every inch. And every play feels huge, because eventually something's going to break, and you're just waiting for it to break. And I think where it broke was on that touchdown pass to Vernon Davis with the toe drag in the back corner of the end zone that actually gave the Niners the lead going into halftime. And that was I thought that was the game right there. That to me was where the game ended. In the sort of reaction part of the game, I thought San Francisco made a huge adjustment. I didn't put it on my recap, but I didn't want to type forever. I don't want to bore anybody or anything, but where I thought they made the adjustment.
Oh, why not? That's what I do. I don't care about boring people.
No, it's okay. I try to keep it short and sweet. You know, I don't want to overdo it, but Kaepernick was, early in the game, he did what he'd been doing for the last few weeks, which was just this overuse of Michael Crabtree. He was forcing the ball into Crabtree, even if he was covered. And eventually, that game plan, I don't know if somebody got into Kaepernick's ear, but he went away from Crabtree and started going back to Bolden and Vernon Davis. And as soon as that happened, the whole game changed. Instead of going back to his speed guy and his almost like new toy, because Crabtree was out for so long and making such, you know, had such a huge game in the previous games, he sort of went back to the guys that really got them in the position that they were in with Bolden and Davis. And as soon as they made that switch, that offense started moving.
Well, there was a sluggo route in there where Anquan Bolden does the slant and go on Captain Munnerlyn. And Captain Munnerlyn was asleep on his cleats. He was in his shoes, standing straight up and standing up asleep, because Bolden went by him like there was nobody standing there. And there was no coverage behind them. I think I'm decent enough at watching football to know when there's a busted coverage, when there was supposed to be a safety back there, because you see the cornerback start looking around like, oh, I'm supposed to have help behind me here. He never looked around. Captain Munnerlyn just completely blew the coverage. And to your point, you know, if Kaepernick wasn't looking for Bolden. He might not have even seen that happen. He might have been so keyed in on Crabtree that he might have completely missed that earlier in the game. But in the second half, he opened things up and was able to see something like that develop right in front of him.
Well, and being that you're a Bears fan, you're completely used to identifying when a team blows at coverage.
I see it enough to know. I've seen way too much of that.
But, yeah, Carolina, I don't want to take anything away from them. I mean, they earned everything that they got. You know, the record, the division title. I mean, they fought for all of that. They proved a lot of people wrong, and they went on this run. But I thought that the whole Riverboat Ron thing didn't play so well. Carolina lost all their momentum not being able to punch it in the red zone. I know on the one they got the ball back and eventually that was that first touchdown Smith where Cam Newton dropped it in real nice over the top. That you kind of had a feeling it was going to be sort of a now or never. They had to get the momentum back and they took the lead there. But they had a lot of opportunities in the red zone that really didn't, you know, come to fruition for them. They need, you know, that was the kind of game, you always say it, but, you know, field goals won't win the game. You know, you need sevens, not threes. I mean, I know that's a cliche, but they needed sevens and not threes. Field goals were not going to beat San Francisco.
And you even tweeted somewhere around halftime or maybe at halftime that you didn't know how San Fran was even wound up leading in that game because you thought Carolina was outplaying them so bad.
No, yeah, Carolina was punching them in the mouth the whole game. But I don't know if it was just that they were expending all of their energy. They looked more interested in just bullying the 49ers, and they were definitely accomplishing that. But at the same time, they weren't scoring the points necessary. And I just had that feeling when it was 13-10 at halftime. I didn't know that they were going to shut the Panthers out in the second half. But it was just a very easy second half for San Francisco. You know, they got that 10, 13-point lead. You never really had a thought that Carolina was going to do anything against that defense in the second half, and they got after Cam Newton. There was one stretch where Carolina got into field goal position, and then they think they got sacked twice. It wasn't bad enough that they knocked you out of field goal range. We're going to knock you all the way back to midfield. It was bad. San Francisco looked good. I'm excited for these games this weekend.
Yeah, that's how it happens sometimes. You get the veteran team that likes to knock you in the mouth and talk about it and bully you around, and they ran up against another team that's able to knock you right back in the mouth and tell you about it. But what the problem is that the younger team got caught up in all of that telling you about how bad they're punching you in the fucking mouth, and the veteran team eventually got around to playing NFL football. And that's why they wound up winning the game. So we will go to our final game to review, the San Diego-Denver game, probably the more boring game of the weekend, so that would make sense that we'll cover that in the VIP after show instead of the live portion. If you want to hear that, you can subscribe to the show on iTunes. Just search for In Much Less Detail, the podcast. Also on the archive page here where you're listening live at blogtalkradio.com/inmuchlessdetail, when this show does get archived after we finish up the after show portion in 15 minutes, it will be available there. We both have reviews up of this past weekend on our blog, and that will be inmuchlessdetail.blogspot.com is where you go for that. You can email the show with any comments or questions. You would do that at inmuchlessdetail@gmail.com. And you can follow us on Twitter. Jason tweeted about the games this weekend. He is at IMLDJTG, and I'm at IMLDDre, as in Dr. Dre. Well, that's it for the live portion of this show. Thanks for listening. And the after show portion, we'll get to San Diego and Denver, and we'll get a little excited and get ready for the conference title game this weekend. we are now into the after show portion of the program where we get to talk about Peyton Manning and Omaha, and the Denver Broncos and their defeat of the San Diego Chargers, even though San Diego covered as we both thought they would.
Yeah, we both expected the Chargers to cover. I thought the Chargers had a good chance of winning. I really liked them to spring the upset. We got one quarter of Chargers football and three quarters of I don't know what the hell that was. They looked tight. they really did. They looked tight. They looked unprepared. And then in that fourth quarter when they just sort of went back to being the freewheel and we don't even belong here Chargers, and they played a little more fast and loose, they looked great. It's what they should have been doing the entire game. But rather than just have that all-or-nothing, ball-to-the-wall game plan, I think they out-thought themselves and out-coached themselves and got away from everything that they did right against a far superior defense in Cincinnati. I mean, Broncos are the worst defense in football, and the Chargers were, you know, they looked like they were going to get shut out. They weren't doing anything. And then all of a sudden, that fourth quarter came along in desperation time. They should have been playing that whole game just desperate. Like, we don't belong here. They held the Broncos to 24 points. You would have told me before the game, Broncos were only going to score 24. I would have told you for sure that the Chargers were going to win that game, because the Broncos are one of those teams that feel like, you know, they need to score 35 or 40 because their defense is going to give up that many. I'm not giving any credit to the Broncos defense. I think that's probably the thing you'll notice. I think that was the Chargers. I think that was just the Chargers. No, how can you? I think that was just the Chargers being tight and kind of wilting in the moment. Wasn't impressed. And then right at the end, I found myself just like secretly rooting for the Chargers. Even though Broncos were my AFC Super Bowl pick, I found myself kind of rooting for the Chargers. Like, everybody likes an underdog story, and they were a fun team. But, you know, nobody can't really put this blown cover on Peyton Manning. I thought he did everything necessary, made all the clutch throws late. I mean, the Chargers had the ball for almost the entire fourth quarter. That, you know, two long touchdown drives sandwiched that onside kick. And they're probably going to look back and wish they had tried another onside kick because they never got the ball back.
Right. Yeah, how do you know? How do you know that you're never going to see the ball again when you kick it off like that? You see the time, 4 minutes or so left, and you think, all right, our defense needs to just stop them once in the next 4 minutes. Just stop them once, and we'll get the ball back. They couldn't stop them once, but you don't know. You if you onside kick, you don't get it back, and then everybody's looking at you cross-eyed, like, why did you try to onside kick two times in a row with 4 minutes left? So it was one of those tough decisions. But, yeah, the only question that really mattered in that game is how did Peyton Manning look, because that's the only thing anyone cared about. It's Peyton Manning in the playoffs. It's the big story. It's what everyone is paying attention to, everybody examining every throw that Peyton Manning makes in the playoffs with a magnifying glass. And, yeah, I'm with you. I think he looks pretty good for the most part. I give him a solid B. But, boy, there was a couple of throws there. There was one interception that he should have had on his record that would have been a really bad interception. He threw it right to a Chargers defensive back, Sharice Wright, who just dropped it because he has no hands. But it looked like he took the lesson from that instead of the Baltimore game where he kept trying to go long and kept trying to force it last year in the playoffs, wound up throwing the big pick in double overtime that lost the game. This time he dialed it back. He said, okay, I know my limitations now. I'm going to trust my running game. I'm going to hand it off and throw short. You know, I'm going to do Omaha and get them offside five times. And I'm going to just limit myself and not try to do too much and wind up losing the game that way. And that's a good way to not cover a 10-point spread, but it's also a good way to secure the victory, which is, of course, more important. So, you know, Peyton had his choice to make, and that looks like he made the right one as far as winning the game.
Yeah, and the throws that he made at the end of the game, where you would expect him to come up small, especially on that 3rd and 17, I mean, So this was, of course, you know, to go back, and this was right when the Chargers decided we're going to kick off and we're going to play some defense. Did everything right on first and second down. They get the Broncos in the 3rd and 17. There's not a lot of plays in your playbook for that. And Peyton Manning makes a really nice, about 23-yard throw on an out. For those of you know, people, oh, he's got the weak arm, but he finds Julius Thomas just wide open out there. Didn't overthrow him, didn't throw a pick. Guy was open, made the right read, got the first down. That was the backbreaker. That was what killed the Chargers. And you do everything right to get the position, you get the ball, you get the onside kick, you get the touchdown again, you kick off, you get them into a 3rd and 17, and you just don't cover anybody, okay, especially the big tight end. And he went to him again on, I believe it was a 3rd and 8. That was the one that really ended up ending the game. So both times the Chargers had a chance to get the ball back, Peyton Manning came up with big throws. So that was informative. That told me some things. Didn't try too much, took what they gave him, won the game. But like you said, that's not going to get you many covers. But it was that Broncos defense that didn't cover. It was 24-7 with 9 minutes left to go in the game. That's an easy yeah. cover. And, you know, no problem, and then the Broncos don't get the ball back until the 3-minute mark after the Broncos just decide to, you know, go back to being that Broncos defense and give up two really nice long touchdown drives to the Chargers. And you can't put that on Peyton Manning. Peyton Manning, you know, there's a lot of apologists I've noticed the last couple of weeks out there trying to justify Peyton's postseason performance and make a lot of excuses. And Brady gets a lot of similar things, you know, because of his two Super Bowl losses. Oh, you can't blame him. Well, if you're going to give the guy all the credit when they win, you got to give him some of the blame when they lose. But I don't put the fact that the Broncos didn't cover the number on Peyton Manning.
Yeah.
I can't.
Well, I could. I could figure out a way to, but I, you know, but it wouldn't be totally fair.
Well, that's your boy.
That's my boy, but that's my boy that I thought was going to do a lot more winning than he has in the last few years. But maybe this is the year. You never know. One thing I wanted to ask about, you talked about San Diego finally turning it on and getting their offense in gear later. Do you think there's anybody on New England for next week that has the ability to exploit Denver's backfield the way that Keenan Allen did? Because I think that's pretty much why San Diego was able to mount a comeback, was Keenan Allen was making some great plays out there. And I don't know if New England, I legitimately don't know that they might have somebody that can do something like that, but I'm not so sure about it.
Well, Brady's going to have to throw the ball more than he did against the Colts. I think that's obvious.
Right. He's not going to just
13.
Run it the whole time, yeah.
13 for 22, something like that. And he's, now that Gronkowski's hurt and he's out and he doesn't really have a Welker type anymore, he does seem to force the ball, or not force the ball, but he seems to alternate between Amendola and Edelman, who are really nice possession type receivers, which is possession type receiver is what you generally say about white guys. That's just a really nice way to say they're white. But they're possession-type receivers. I don't really have a lot. I think Kendrell Tompkins officially has a concussion now, and I think Aaron Dobson might still be around out there, but he doesn't really have that guy or that hidden weapon. The hidden weapon for the Patriots was Garrett Blunt. Nobody really saw that coming. Now, it's fortunate for the Patriots because it makes the Broncos have to game plan and legitimately go into this game thinking they're going to have to stop the run. But I think if the Patriots are going to beat the Broncos, they're going to have to do it through the air. I don't think they're going to be able to, you know, the as much credit as we give Andrew Luck for all the things he did, the Broncos offense is in a different class. It can run the ball. They have a world-class tight end that Julius Thomas is a great tight end, even though he's only been in the league a couple of years. And then they have Demaryius Thomas. They have Wes Welker. So they're going to come at you. They're gonna so the Patriots aren't gonna they're not gonna have as easy of a time on defense either. But no, I don't think that the answer to your question is no. The Patriots don't have a guy like that, but Brady seems to find those guys. Brady just seems to do his little drop back and just chuck, you know, three-step drop and boom, it's out like a dart, and he finds a guy diving over the middle, which is where the Broncos are especially weak. And that's what you're going to see a lot of. Guys just diving over the middle. That's going to be their play. Throwing it low.
Yeah, Julian Edelman might be the guy.
Yeah, it's going to be
and
one of those two
guys.
It's going to be Amendola or Edelman. You don't know which one, though.
Right. Whoever they leave open, of the, which whatever one of the two is open, that's who Brady's going to hit and try to make a star out of him.
Right. So Philip Rivers clearly had one guy. You know,
right.
But Brady's got like three half guys. You don't know which one. It's like with the running game. You don't know which one it's going to be. The Chargers, you knew who the guy was going to be. You don't know that with the Patriots. And then after, they looked great. I mean, I hate them. I really do. I didn't want them to win, but I had to appreciate what I was watching, because for a team that I called the weakest two seed I've ever seen, they put on a show. And their defense suddenly looked a little more revitalized. But I think that was partially because of the fact that they just, after they got the lead, the big lead early, they could put the ears back a little bit more, and they kind of knew that Andrew Luck, to T.Y. Hilton, was like, this is it. This is all you can do. And he used a little bit of those other guys, but the Patriots knew what was coming. And when you know what's coming, 9 times out of 10, you're gonna get the other team. They were sitting on the fastball. Let's just say that.
Right. So it is all set up next Sunday, 2 o'clock Central Time. I always refer to Central Time because that's where I've lived all my life, and so have you. Well, you lived in Mountain Time briefly in Montana.
I lived in Mountain Time for a few years, yeah.
Yeah. But 2 o'clock Central Time, 3 o'clock on the East Coast. It'll be, like you said, Manning versus Brady part 45 or whatever it might be. New England at Denver for the AFC title. And that wonderful quarterback exhibition and all that loveliness and floweriness and all the caressing and loving that Peyton and Brady are going to get will be followed immediately by probably one of the bloodier, more painful games you're ever going to see, the Concussion Bowl, it might be called when it's all said and done, as the San Francisco 49ers go into Seattle to try to avenge the beating that Seattle gave them in Seattle earlier this season for the NFC Championship. I forget what the total score was, but the last two times San Francisco has gone into Seattle, they've lost by a lot of points. I don't have the exact number, but it's a lot. So if San Francisco was keyed up to avenge Carolina for a one-point loss earlier this year, by definition, they should be out of their frickin' minds ready to avenge the beating that Seattle gave them earlier this season.
Well, I'll tell you one thing. This is the first time I can remember in a very long time where every Super Bowl combination is great. Every single one. I mean, if we, you know, you go through all the combinations, the four combinations of all the games, the way these can turn out, every single matchup is a compelling matchup. I would watch every single possible matchup that we could get out of these two games as a Super Bowl matchup and be happy with what we get. There's no dog Super Bowl. There's no team here that doesn't belong or that's just lucky to be here. Every single team earned their way here, played great football. Nobody got here by luck. So I'm extremely excited for the next three games that we get. This is really going to go out well this season. It's going to be a good one.
And also, nobody got here named Luck. This broadcast is copyrighted. We will see you Saturday night for our picks for the conference title games. We'll see you then.